In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
A lot of fentanyl is made in factories in China. A lot of it kills Canadians. But it's what comes in between those two events that will both amaze and horrify you.
The links between an Asian criminal network using Canadian casinos and luxury real estate to launder billions of dollars from the sale of the deadly drug fentanyl.
When I tell you that the story we're going to share today touches on almost every hot-button issue in Canada, I am not even exaggerating. See, the fentanyl has to get into Canada. This impacts border security and Canadian-Chinese relations. It has to be sold by criminals who are organized enough to avoid capture and to operate at scale. Now we're discussing law enforcement resources. These drugs are incredibly addictive and incredibly dangerous. You may have heard we're in the middle of an opioid epidemic. These specifically are the drugs behind a lot of it. And once the drugs are sold and consumed, that money needs to be laundered. And there's a lot of money, billions. And so, have you heard about the incredible spike in real estate prices in Vancouver? See, this is an incredibly complex investigation, and it describes an operation that's still happening right now. So after we explain it to you, we will try to answer the main question you'll be left with. We know all of this. Why can't we stop it? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
People would be stunned and amazed to know how much of Vancouver specifically, how many homes have been built with drug trafficking and how prevalent it is, drug trafficking, money laundering, and real estate.
Sam Cooper is a Global News investigative reporter, and this is a global investigation in both senses of that word. Sam, this investigation is sprawling. What set the wheels in motion for it, and where does the story start if you had to pin it down?
If I had to pin it down, our most recent investigative series started with a question about 6 months ago in a meeting. We were talking about fentanyl, how many people are dying in Canada, and how there doesn't seem to be a way to stop this. We knew that it was the fentanyl that is really killing people, that is driving up the death rates, is connected to organized crime. It's illicit fentanyl or precursors that are coming in from China. So we were asking the question, who's really making the big money off of this, or who are the kingpins of this trade? And I had a lot of information suggesting that it was a gang with roots in China that was very strong in British Columbia. And I had been looking into them in casino money laundering and real estate money laundering for a number of years, really. So we set out to dig deeper, get more facts, more data, and that's where our most recent investigation led to. We were able to isolate a gang called the Big Circle Boys with roots in China that are they're very strong in Vancouver, Toronto, Alberta. They're also in Montreal.
Who are the Big Circle Boys?
So the Big Circle Boys, the Canadian court records, we looked into court records going back to the late 1980s. All the law enforcement intelligence and sources were connecting these casino loan sharks, illegal casinos, drug houses in the Richmond and Vancouver, Metro Vancouver area. The sources were all saying the Big Circle Boys are running this or are associated to this. So the Big Circle Boys have become the dominant Asian organized crime drug trafficking syndicate in Canada. That's what the court records say. A court record pointed to one kingpin in Ontario, and the judge said this man admitted he's most responsible for opioid overdose deaths in British Columbia and southern Ontario. Now, this was before fentanyl came into the picture, so it has to be even worse now. But they're a gang that grew out of southern China. They had roots to the Red Guards, which was a paramilitary political organization. They spread from the 60s, 70s into Hong Kong and then into North America in the 1980s and 90s. They dominated heroin and starting probably after 2010, they found a way to mix fentanyl into heroin, and they've just got, from my research and investigation, even stronger since then. So in brief, they are the kingpins of the fentanyl trade in North America, and it looks like the world.
How does that all tie together? I realize that's an incredibly complex question, but once you started looking into real estate, where did it go next?
We were looking at real estate and just the way prices surged in 2015 in the Metro Vancouver area by over 30%. Anyone that was looking at that from just using their eyes could see something was crazy there. Many people were saying, well, the only people buying are people that are coming in and speaking Mandarin. Most of them still have connections to mainland China, if not live in China. So looking at that, it was a difficult question because there are debates in Vancouver about, when we're talking about people from one area, is it wrong to say all the buyers seem to be from China?
Right.
And my response to that was, well, something strange is going on. Prices don't jump by 30% in 1 year. People's local incomes haven't jumped by that. Let's follow the big money. That led to the question, in China, you're only allowed to bring out $50,000 per year because the government has tight capital controls. They want to control their economy. So how was all this money coming in if we know that most of the buyers paying the big money were from another country that could only, personally, they can only bring out so much? So that eventually led to various gray or black ways of getting money from China into Canada, and underground banking became the answer. Beyond that, we started to see that casinos were linked to it, and later I found that cash and most criminal cash and drug cash were linked to it, and that led to just a whole wide world of organized crime connections and schemes. So what ties it all in is underground banking and organized crime.
What does underground banking look like?
Underground banking is, there's many terms for the way it is performed in different cultures. It's an ancient form of banking, really. It goes back to mercantilism, and in China it goes back for hundreds, if not perhaps 1,000 of years in the Silk Road. But the easiest way to describe it is you have unofficial bankers in different areas of the world. So, for example, let's just say we have a family named Smith in British Columbia, and there's a Smith brother in Quebec. For some reason, there's difficulty getting money from BC to Quebec. Let's just say there was in our test case here, a wall was put up for some reason.
Right.
So Brother Smith in British Columbia, he takes some business from a person that for some reason wants to take out money in Quebec. He says, you're going to deposit $200 with me, and then you're going to travel to Quebec, and my brother is going to give you $200. And so the brother in BC will take a $5 fee or something like that for his services. The money is being transferred in that way by the brothers in two different areas, adjusting their accounts and settling up later. And so you can see that the money really hasn't traveled, but a person was able to get it from one place to another. He can then conduct his business in Quebec, whatever it is.
Do you have any idea from your research why they decided on this particular method for laundering their money and why they got involved in BC real estate? Because from the outside, it kind of looks to me like a chicken or the egg thing. Like, did BC housing prices spike and then they realized this was a good way to launder lots of money? Or was their laundering kind of precipitating that spike?
Well, the police sources say that they believe the Asian organized crime drug traffickers have driven prices in Vancouver. And, you know, I started with that question to someone who couldn't be named. And I said, you know, you've been on a number of these fentanyl files. You know the people involved. Who are the kingpins in Canada? He said, it's Asian organized crime. I said, what would surprise people? He said, it's only starting to come to light, you know, with some of your reporting. people would be stunned and amazed to know how much of Vancouver specifically, how many homes have been built with drug trafficking and how prevalent it is, drug trafficking, money laundering, and real estate. So the answers and the data we found indicated, yes, it is a big part. And it goes back really to the 1990s. This hasn't been outlined very much in Canadian media, but there were some tycoons from Hong Kong that were connected to triads, according to the RCMP documents, and were connected to international money laundering, were connected to international smuggling, it's believed connected to drug trafficking. And some of these, I don't want to say that everyone was, but certainly there are a few that the law enforcement information is very strong, connected to high-level triad activity. They were developing. They were developing in Vancouver, and it appears that's when Vancouver prices really started to move. So we can look at, you know, a street loan shark, or we can look at people that are seen as some of the richest people in the world, and the information is that they are connected to drug trafficking.
Is there somebody who is the face of this when you started digging into this these kind of schemes, who you could sort of put a finger on and say, this is somebody that we need to be watching, and what's he doing?
Yes, in British Columbia, because I got whistleblowers delivered documents to me that uncovered this casino-centered and underground banking-centered and drug trafficking-centered investigation that had been going on in British Columbia since 2015. The public knew nothing about it. The public didn't know about these hockey bags of cash coming into BC casinos in suspicious transactions where staff just turned a blind eye to them. And so people came forward with documents that identified what was called a banned lender. Essentially, they pointed to the IDs of a number of people that were, in common terms, loan sharks or a gang of loan sharks. So I had some names. With that, I got another list that connected these loan sharks to wealthy offshore individuals who were coming into British Columbia and taking out loans from these loan sharks that were not really loans. They were just drug cash taken from the streets of BC, and these wealthy individuals from China could gamble with that cash, then cash out and really have cleaned funds to buy homes in BC and then pay back in China where their source of wealth was.
So I understand how the money gets moved over and invested in real estate. Where does fentanyl come into this circle?
It's been established beyond doubt that most of the illicit fentanyl coming into North America is produced in factories in southern China. There are also some other areas in Asia, India, the Ukraine, where some factories are producing the chemicals or illicit fentanyl. But law enforcement says the vast majority of the fentanyl is produced in factories in China. And that's important because what we found was that a gang, this gang that we've named, the Big Circle Gang, had some sort of usage or control of factories through corruption in China. Really what emerged was they're able to set up sort of a protected system in which they can produce the fentanyl in China. They can they either own the factories because they may be industrialists, or they may be paying money to local police or government officials. They have control. For some reason, people aren't stopping them from doing bad things in those factories. They also have control of customs and border guards, so they can ship the fentanyl out. Their gain connections in British Columbia, when it arrives, can receive precursors. They have labs to produce fentanyl, pill presses. They can produce it in BC and use BC as a hub to spread the drug across Canada and North America. And that brings us back to the underground banking. When they have their real problem is the mountains of drug cash produced from this incredibly profitable drug. What do they do with it? So what they do is they loaned it out, allegedly, to the gamblers coming into BC and gambling. That was one way of laundering it. Another way, there are allegations that they have connections to some lawyers who were handling drug cash, some real estate agents providing their own bank accounts to gangsters so that gangsters could pour drug cash anonymously into home purchases. And then the other underground banking means is you take out that drug cash loan in BC if you're a VIP gambler from China or Macau, and then you pay it back, perhaps with a small fee in China, and that money goes into a bank account controlled by the gang, and that money is used to produce more fentanyl in the factories. So there, from start to finish, you can see a dirty money or drug cash loop from China, usually into Richmond, BC, cycling across Canada, and then going back to China, sometimes through Hong Kong.
If we can see all that, especially through the work that you've done, why hasn't any investigation been successful? And what is law enforcement facing when they try to break this?
Well, law enforcement, one big part of the series was that law enforcement had done a study. First of all, they had investigations underway, and it has now become clear that these investigations were massive. They had incredible evidence, but there were some problems with the investigations that we still don't understand. That's what caused investigations to fall apart. So I'm gathering that some of my whistleblowers and sources must have wanted a way to get out solid information to the public through reporting and to tell the story that they know this is going on. They have done a study that established about $1 billion in real estate money laundering in Vancouver per year, most recently 2016, connected to this organized crime network that we're talking about. And yet they were saying, we don't have, first of all, the RCMP especially doesn't have the resources to tackle this real estate money laundering or even the casino money laundering. We don't have the sophistication or financial means of the FBI or the DEA or even the Australian Federal Police. So we know the problem is there. Everyone can see it in BC. It's extremely dangerous. It's an urgent crisis. But we don't have the law enforcement means to tackle it. So where do we go from here? That's, I think, really where we finished with the story. So we don't know where to go from here.
Was there ever a moment or a particular fact that really sort of drove home to you the immensity of this investigation? Because, I mean, we're talking about the Vancouver housing crisis. We're talking about the fentanyl crisis. We're talking about casino money laundering, and they're all tied together.
There were a lot of little moments that came together over the course of a few years. And the way I look at it is sometimes there would be a revelation or a clarity where you can say, now we can conclude that the evidence is so strong and corroborated. And that's stunning to me. I mean, the hockey bags of cash going into BC casinos was stunning. The understanding of how this underground banking worked, that is, money wasn't really moving across the borders, but these loans were occurring. And then you added in that loop that this was drug cash from the streets of BC. And then the way it was paid back was funding more drug production to send more drugs into BC. So you had that loop of money and drugs. That was mind-blowing to me. But then you added more details where, again, talking about seeing what was going on in Vancouver, seeing the empty homes, seeing the Lamborghinis, the Ferraris, and seeing the local incomes that just didn't match it. I think there was a reasonable number of analysts that have been saying something strange is going on here. And I believed that probably it was in the billions going back to the 1990s, but getting the data that police studies that will never be released to the public, but I obtained showed that indeed $1 billion was connected to Asian organized crime networks in 2016. When I found that, it was both a confirmation of what I suspected and believed, and just a mind-blowing number that, first of all, the police took hundreds of hours to research this information with information that only they have. I mean, the public can look at property documents, but the public doesn't have secret police records on these organized crime networks. So when you put the two together, the police found something that no one outside government circles could establish. So to me, that was really that's the finding that made this investigation explosive, and that really confirms that something needs to change in British Columbia and Canada to deal with the problem.
Is there anything on the horizon that could deal with this, that could make a difference?
Unfortunately, what we have now is, I believe we have an agreement among a number of top-level bureaucrats and some politicians that there's an enormous problem. An example is after we did a story that showed that our sources said the fentanyl coming into Canada will get worse because China doesn't seem to be taking this problem seriously at a state level. And beyond that, our sources said they're using fentanyl as leverage. They're saying, if you want us to cooperate with you and reduce this fentanyl flow, you need to work with us on going after alleged corruption or financial fugitives in British Columbia. It seemed like an improper quid pro quo that's going on. We've confirmed that this has been part of the background diplomacy between China and Canada that the public had no idea about. And then since that point, military officials have come out and said, yes, this may be a hostile act. This is something that Canada, first of all, doesn't seem to be able to stop and doesn't have a willing partner in China. So it's coming out into the open that some people within the military and police see this as almost like a covert, I have to use the word, some sort of Cold War going on. So we're getting that acknowledgement now. We are getting politicians saying that something needs to be done, but no one is coming forward with solutions yet. And so one thing that I and some other researchers have been talking about is it really seems that there needs to be a public commission of inquiry in British Columbia along the lines of a Charbonneau commission in Quebec. This would be a way to bring sort of heat and light to the situation in British Columbia. BC's Attorney General has said they're in an urgent crisis. The premier in BC has said the rule of law has failed after this money laundering investigation collapsed. So really, it without any exaggeration, it really feels that British Columbia is in a shaky position. And to my mind, a public inquiry looking at the scale of organized crime, the corruption that has allowed organized crime to take hold in British Columbia, and how fentanyl can be stopped, real estate money laundering, all these questions need to be looked at in an inquiry like the one that happened in Quebec. And I think that's a step forward.
Thanks for taking the time today, Sam, and thanks for this insanely detailed investigation.
Thank you. Hopefully we can talk again when we learn more.
Sam Cooper, Global News investigative reporter. That was The Big Story. For more from us, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Check out some other episodes. You can also find us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And we are wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, on the Best of 2018 Apple list. So tell a friend, give us a rating, give us a review. The Big Story is produced by Claire Broussard. Stephanie Phillips and Ryan Clark are our assistant producers. Megan Coley is on our social media. She's our associate editor. And of course, I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk on Monday.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.